Professor De Farina, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. First, can you tell us about yourself?
Sure. I am a science communicator, full-time science communicator, best known for my YouTube channel, Professor Dave Explains. I also wrote a book, I give talks. That's pretty much it.
Obviously, I know you and most of us maybe from your debunking videos in your YouTube channel. But I believe that debunking is not your main pursuit in your academic life. My question is, how do you feel to be known more as a debunker rather than an actual science communicator?
I'm good with it. I mean, the thing is, it is science communication, right? The debunking work I do is science communication. I'm explaining science to the public in the form of exposing people who are disinforming the public. So there's definitely a combination of educational content with a public service, as opposed to my academic tutorials, which are purely educational. I mean, that's still a public service, I suppose, but they're two different kinds of content. But it's true, I'm sort of I don't really know which one I'm better known for, because if you go to any, say, chemistry department at any university, I'm known for my tutorials, and there's plenty of people who actually don't even know that I do debunks. But it's certainly true that there's a growing demographic that are fans of the debunks and pretty much just watch those. Yeah.
From all your debunking career, which person or idea do you think is the most destructive, the most dangerous?
The most dangerous, I mean, I think that the one that has the most potential to be harmful is just generally all of the Christian nationalist, theocratically intentional propaganda. So that's all your, you know, creationist stuff, because that ultimately has nefarious political intentions. As opposed to, say, like flat earth, which is just something dumb that a few people, you know, not very many people fall for. But then also the medical stuff that's more immediate and more tangible harm. We have kids dying of measles again and things like that. And it's like, well, that doesn't need to be happening at all. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Yeah, it's a lot of it. Most of it is very harmful, obviously. Yeah.
Since I lived in Asia now, I don't really know well about Christian nationalists. Can you explain a little bit about Christian nationalism?
Sure. So there are people who are hyper-religious, and most of them are even young earth creationists. So it's a denial of most science. Would like to see biblical law implemented as federal law, right? So they want the nation to abide by, you know, a code that is derived of their religion, which is directly antithetical to the American Constitution, right? We have freedom of religion here, so everybody's free to practice whatever religion they want, but we're also free from everyone else's religion, whether you have one or not. In my case, I am not religious, and I have no interest in entertaining anyone's desire to exercise religious authority over me, and I won't allow it. So we're seeing this kind of, religious arguments towards certain laws and the restriction of women's bodily autonomy, right? Anytime you're talking about abortion and things of that nature, there's a religious argument that's infiltrating the conversation. And then same with the people trying to get religion taught in public schools, public school science classes. Those are just sort of the first steps towards something that, might in the long run resemble the show The Handmaid's Tale. I don't know if you've seen The Handmaid's Tale, but religious authority dominating the political landscape and then ruling authoritatively with a militarized police force in the streets and everything, and really, really, really bad stuff. And we want to try to avoid that if at all possible.
How big do you think the chance of the world actually dumped down due to this kind of false ideas and movements?
It's we're actively seeing it. Disinformation is completely out of control, in particular in this in the post-COVID era. It was getting worse, but in the past 5 years, it's ballooned absolutely out of control. And we are seeing the ramifications of this in terms of the global rise of fascism. So obviously here in America, and then but in other places too, in Italy and Germany and other countries, we're seeing a little bit of a response to that. I think Canada and Australia had recent elections that were moving in the correct direction as a direct response to what's going on politically in America and Europe, which is a good sign. But still does not afford us any progress in these problematic areas, one of which is America. And so it's hard to know what to do, you know what I mean? I'm just one person and I want to, you know, try to encourage as many other people as possible to get into this business of trying to help the public know what is true and what is happening, because it's very important. So we'll see if we can make any headway with that in the next few years.
Can you give recommendation another YouTubers like you that debunks such dangerous ideas?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really specific because I want to hesitate. I hesitate to try to tell people how to make content because I think everybody should figure out their own style and their own format for making content, what works for them. I've been doing this a while, so I've definitely found mine. And it is very effective for some people and very ineffective for some people. So for some people, I kind of, you know, I have a more abrasive tone. And that is able to break through to certain people, and then for certain people, it has an opposite effect, and they double down and become even more indoctrinated. But you know, you have to do something, right? There's no con. There is. It is absolutely impossible. I guess my advice would be is don't worry about trying to fix a problem or cure everybody, right? There is no content you could make that will convince 100% of the people who fell for a particular scam that they've been scammed. It's not going to happen. So you go for this group over here. I'll try to get this group, right? If we all do a bunch of different kinds of content, our efforts combined could stand a shot at really putting a huge dent in that following. And so that's what we should be doing.
If you were given a chance to deliver a call to action speech, how would you perform that? How would you perform that? What would you say?
I mean, that's kind of what I'm doing. I re really at the end of most of my debunks, I do kind of, you know, pan out a little bit and offer some broader perspective. And it's basically what I've been telling you. I mean, it's just if you chart the progress of what is going on socially and politically, like it's really, really bad, right? We have the, you know, income disparity is growing and growing and growing, right? The masses are being further and further subjugated by an oligarchy that has ballooned completely out of control. And they are the ones that are crafting all of this propaganda to try to polarize people against science, right? Against academia, against any concept of scientific authority or scientific fact, just to continue to confuse and manipulate the public, right? Manipulate them, manipulate their voting behaviors to continue to elect these kinds of demagogues, right? Trump, that we elected Trump a second time is real. It really speaks volumes about where we are socially, right? That the public could be manipulated to that degree is really scary. And this propaganda is absolutely widespread. And if we do not help the public form, you know, get more of a knowledge base to be able to spot these lies, right, and see that they've been tricked, then we're going to continue to be manipulated and subjugated until we don't have any rights left, right? Soon we will see some kind of artificial threat manufactured, and as a response, we need to, you know, clamp down control. You know, for your own safety, we need to have, you know, militarized police in every city and things like that. Like that's where these sorts of societies go, right? That's where these hyper-nationalistic types of societies go, is authoritarian rule. We've seen it in virtually every century of human history. And I don't want to go there. I don't want us to go there. I don't want us to go there in America. I don't want Europeans to go there. So it's time to fight, right? This is not like a distant threat. It's happening now. Fascism is here now in America. There are policies that Trump has enacted that are undeniably fascistic. That's not hyperbolic. He is fascist. And so we know where this has a tendency to go, and it's happening today. So we need to fight. We need to fight right now, and it's an information war. Right. This war is being waged not with guns, pistols and stuff. It's an information war, and it's on the internet.
What is it that they try to achieve ultimately, actually?
Power and wealth. It's nothing new or sophisticated about it, right? Since the time of the first large scale civilizations, it's been a struggle for wealth and power. That's it.
Okay, let's talk about your own academic interest. Let's talk something much more lighter now. What is the type of educational content that you actually passionate most talking?
Let's see. I mean, I guess just like my own. I really like space stuff. I mean, astronomy is really cool. Pretty much every series I do, though, I'm getting something out of it, especially stuff that I didn't have any knowledge of prior. And so I'm hiring a PhD candidate or a PhD holder in a particular field to write me scripts on, say, zoology or geology, or doing forensic science. Like, there's all these random topics where it's I do find it enjoyable to kind of get to learn for a living, sort of, as I'm putting together that content. I definitely pick up quite a lot of new knowledge. I won't lie, the debunks are kind of the most like viscerally satisfying, though. It's really fun to kind of ruin the day of certain con men and then see like a really tangible effect. A tangible result in their followers, and see people kind of go, oh wow, I thought they were legit. I guess they're not. I'm gonna unfollow or whatever it is, and like, okay, we're making progress here,
What was the worst reaction that those people ever give to you?
I would say the first time I made any content on trans people. It got picked up by Matt Walsh in the Daily Wire, and he did this b ridiculous response, and then that triggered the most incredible wave of trolling I've ever experienced. It was about 2 weeks of being called a pedophile and a groomer every 3 seconds, literally. It's so bad that I turned off comments on those videos because it was just like, I'm not going to, I can't withstand this level of abuse. It's absolutely insane.
What about the chemistry one? I think it's the video that you post the most, right? What about it? What about it?
Yeah, I mean, so chemistry is what I know the best. That's what I studied, and I think that my organic chemistry content is some of my best content because that's me teaching the way I taught. Right, the first stuff I ever did was just I delivered my organic chemistry lectures to camera, just as though I were teaching class, and I genuinely feel that I have a extremely a good, solid ability to explain that content possibly better than any other content on YouTube. So that's the stuff that it's that directly contrasts with some geology tutorials or something where I think that it's very good content, but I'm conveying the expertise of someone else, right? I'm the conduit, right? They write the content, I animate it, and I that's where I add my visual aesthetic, which I think is very clear. I have a good ability to display knowledge, display information, and make it very clear. But ultimately, in terms of like actually explaining things better than anyone else, that would be my chemistry content because that's what I genuinely know the most about. So,
Why did you choose to be a chemist?
Well, I've never been a chemist. I studied chemistry. I did a little bit of research, in the lab during a master's program. But I never wanted to be a chemist. I had no interest, actually, if I'm being honest. I really wanted to learn about chemistry because I found it fascinating because I think that it's absolutely mind-boggling that we have this level of command over the molecular world. That first of all, that we even figured out that molecules exist is astounding. But so far beyond that is the ability, and in taking, I think Organic Chemistry 1 was the first course I took as an undergrad where I was like, This is crazy. Like, I need to know more about this. That we can assemble and identify a molecular structure and build it. Mm-hmm. You know, at whim. At a whim, we can just build any molecule we want. It's astounding. You know, who would not be impressed by that? I can't understand such a person. You know.
Do you have any scientific hero?
I mean, you know, Galileo and Newton and those kinds of figures. In terms of today, I mean, I regard almost any researcher as heroic to a certain degree. I mean, part of me is impressed just because I found research to be very tedious and monotonous, and I didn't find any passion for it. I mean, I never. Intended to do it anyway. I was just kind of going through the motions of the master's program to keep a teaching job. But I'm certainly very impressed by any researcher that can do this day in, day out for decades, and then uncover extend the limits of human knowledge in a particular scientific field. I find that very impressive. So to a certain degree, any good researcher is heroic.
What kind of knowledge that's still mysterious to us that you hope to be unveiled maybe in the near future?
I want to know what dark matter is. I think everybody wants to know what dark matter is. That comes to mind first as a mystery. I'm hoping that there's certain missions like Europa, Clipper, I think already launched, but then Europa Lander ideally will go. I'd love to be alive to find some evidence of like microbial life on another celestial body, right? Whether it's a Jovian moon or if we get something a little bit more conclusive in terms of a signature from an exoplanet or something like that, right? All we get is kind of data that's like, ooh, this suggests that it is possible, perhaps, that this might be a biosignature or something. I want to see, go to Mars or go to Europa or go to Enceladus or something and see a bacterium or, see some kind of microbe and go, that's it. We found it. I would be so and then also other commercialized space travel. I'm just dying to see the Earth from orbit. I just really hope that I can make that. I feel like 20 years from now, anyone who's rather wealthy will be able to do it. So I think I have hope there.
Oh, I kind of lost my train of thought then. Wait. What do you think the world would react should we find a life outside of Earth?
I mean, sadly, if it's microbial, I think not everyone would be as captivated as me and other members of, as members of the scientific community. I think it would be like, oh, cool, it'd be a headline for a second, and then everybody would stop caring. I think the only way people would care is if it was like, a monster with eight arms and like, which we might find that too. I don't know what's under the ice shell in Europa. We could drill down there and there's freaking multicellular life there. I don't know. Could be. That would be wild if we found some weird fish-looking stuff in Europa. But that's obviously way less likely than finding microbial life. But I would be over the moon about that already. It's absolutely incredible. Because what that would mean is just that, abiogenesis would no longer be viewed as this insane, a completely improbable, problem that necessitates divine intervention. And so he's like, no, look at that in our own solar system. It's right there. We found some more, I'm sure this happens everywhere. And in fact, I do believe that microbial life is probably fairly commonplace in the universe. But we haven't found it. So,
Yeah. Is there any topic that you haven't talked about in your video that you want to talk about maybe in the future?
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, I've been doing, botany and geology and ecology. And so the logical progression there is to get into environmental science. So I want to get into, and everybody asked me to debunk climate change deniers, and I really want to hit environmental science tutorials first. So I have sort of a more rigid academic foundation to refer people back to as I do those debunks and say, for more information, go watch these tutorials. I'm hitting engineering soon, and then from there I can go into computer science and coding, and then start to be a little more involved in all the tech-based advancements, which will be good for me because that's a weak area for me. I don't understand tech well at all, so that's a good opportunity for me to start to get a little bit better of an understanding of that realm. That's about it off the top of my head.
Okay. Do you have any... what do you think about philosophy?
Philosophy is a fascinating area of study. I have some philosophy tutorials that I did. I think it's an interesting thing that everyone can study. I also think that it's a crutch for pseudo-intellectuals. I definitely see that in the science space. There's people who try to undermine the validity of science by talking about philosophical assumptions that science made. It's like, all right, like, you're not 100% wrong here. Like, yes, like, empiricism, it was a philosophical movement, and you know, you can compare it to other philosophical ideas, but, you know, at the same time, science has proven its own validity time and time again. So I think if you're a philosopher and you're doing research in philosophy and writing, you know, doing, you know, writing and on philosophical topics, that's great. If you're a scholar of philosophy, but I, you know, as I said, I see philosophical jargon abused all the time with science deniers. So,
Okay. For the last topic, let's talk a little about religion. What do you think about religion?
It's a big question. Religion is something that I totally understand why it came about, why it began to exist. I think that it is an expression of certain aspects of the human psyche. And I think that there are pros and cons to its existence. I think that the cons outweigh the pros the more sophisticated and advanced human civilization becomes. At the same time, while I am not religious and I hope that civilization continues to move further and further away from religion, I'm not interested in forcibly eradicating it. I know plenty of people who are religious and derive a lot of spiritual satisfaction from it and yet are not anti-science or counterfactual in their worldview in any way. And so I do not view this as any kind of a problem. There's a cultural richness that comes along with, you know, identifying with religions that have been around for thousands of years. If you can do it in a way that's not, that doesn't persecute anyone or judge other people for not being part of that culture, then again, that is not harmful. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. I don't think it'll ever completely go away. I just hope that we become more and more and more secular until it just becomes different flavors of theism that exist immaculately alongside a scientific worldview and, you know, scientific progress for mankind.
Oh yeah. Oh wait. One more question. What about making contents about the science behind music, or maybe the science behind video game making, something like that? Do you have any kind of that idea in mind?
Yeah, music. I'm definitely going to do. I'm a musician. I'm a lifelong musician, and so I'm most interested. I definitely want to make content on music theory, as well as ethnomusicology, and then some aspects of music performance. So the first one I would do is drum set. I'm self-taught on the drums, so I would like to make tutorials to help people learn drums. But yeah, music theory going through, music theory slash history of music, sort of to go through like the earliest conceptions of temperament and how we arrived at certain scales and certain frequencies for the notes in the that you know say the notes on the piano, right? How we arrived at those frequencies and you know scales and modes and all the kind of the math that underpins all that stuff. And then ethnomusicology, I just am such a fanatic for world music, and I'm fascinated by the traditional musics of various indigenous peoples. Have studied a lot of that in the form of percussion mainly in my own life, and so would like to kind of bring, you know, some of those rhythms and explain mathematically what they're all about, stuff like that. Yeah, I'm music is my number one passion, actually. So it'd be nice to incorporate that. Yeah.
What kind of music do you play?
So I grew up playing classical piano. So that was kind of my childhood was classical piano. And then right before college, I started messing around on drums. And then in college, I had this really transformative experience where I began playing drum set and then various ethnic percussions, Ghanaian percussion, Afro-Cuban percussion, Indian percussion, various other, orchestral percussion, vibraphones and all these other things. Since then, I, have been in many, many bands, mostly of within the rock umbrella, I would say, but certainly flirting with jazz and electronica and other genres. Right now, the project of mine that I'm trying to carve time out to get back to is very heavily synth-based rock music, I guess I would say, is what it is. It's called Simulated Sun. Very interested in themes of futurism and tech and dystopia and just that kind of, trying to create interesting soundscapes and interesting ideas pertaining to futurism and color them in musically. I'm getting back to synth now. So I write the music and then front on synth as opposed to drums. I've been predominantly a drummer in most of my bands. So yeah, that's what I'm into. Oh,
cool. So this is the kind of story that, you haven't talk about with in your videos, right? So I think there is no one knows that you actually play music in the YouTube space, right? Yeah. So
I talk about it sometimes. So some people know. I mean, I try to I've tried multiple times to kind of push people over towards my music, and people don't really seem to care too much, but some do. I drop a little plug for myself whenever I can, but people are there for the science content, so.
But what do you think about the relationship between music and science?
I think that there's obviously there's science that goes into crafting musical instruments, right? We're trying to figure out we're coming at sound production in a very practical, methodical way. So there's sort of a core there of creation, when we're creating something for a practical purpose, that includes, inventing instruments and things like that. Obviously synthesizers, how could you get more scientific than a synthesizer, right? We're taking our understanding of waveforms, sound waves, and being able to create them, manipulate them with different filters and things like that. So that's obviously science. Then ultimately where it departs is that much like any other art, it's driven by aesthetics. So science is driven by practicality, right? We have something that we're trying to understand or create, and music and any other art is purely aesthetic, right? When I write a melody or a rhythm or something like that, and I decide what I want it to be, it is not based on any practical element. It is purely aesthetic. I'm saying that's the melody because I say so, because I like it. Right. Science doesn't work that way, right? We
Yeah.
don't say that's the equation because it looks nice to me. That's the one that I like. No, it has to model reality and make predictions and correlate with physical phenomena. So they're both immensely powerful, right? Science has the ability to describe the physical world, and art has the ability to influence the mind and influence the way a person looks at the world. So combined, pretty good stuff, you know.
Right, that will be all. Professor De Farina, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right.